You have heard me talk about this time and time again, but there is no singular pathway in business. Even though we may all be running physical product-based businesses, we each embark on a different journey, working towards different goals and making different choices along the way. One of my favorite parts about the work I do is seeing the transformation as folks continue their entrepreneurial journey. And in my position, I am lucky enough to have a lot of candid and confidential conversations about what that evolution includes, both the good and the bad. But today, I wanted to bring you into one of those important conversations with both a friend and client of mine, Sam Kramer of Near Modern Disaster. You may remember Sam from episode 2 of Proof to Product, which we recorded way back in 2016. So much has changed since then in Sam's life and in her business. Since that podcast aired, Sam has moved to Florida. She outgrew 2 studio spaces. She hired a larger team, including bringing her husband into the business full-time as a studio manager. Not only has Sam's product line grown, but her confidence as a business owner has grown too, and you will hear that in this episode. Today is part 1 of a 2-part series. On today's episode, Sam is sharing some updated stats about how many stores she's carried in, the number of SKUs she sells, and how her wholesale program has evolved. She also shares 4 things that have made the biggest impact on her business growth. Now, before we jump in, today's episode is brought to you by our Is Wholesale Right for You audio series. I'll be honest with you, wholesale is not for everyone. But after listening to this audio series, I know 2 things will be true. You will know whether you want to pursue wholesale for your product business, and 2, you will have the confidence and action steps to get started. Get access to this free audio series at prooftoproduct.com/privatepod. That's prooftoproduct.com/privatepod. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of 4. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. I'm on a mission to empower product-based business owners to confidently grow their revenue in their own way and at their own pace. Here at Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies, find inspiration, and action steps to help you start, streamline, and scale your product-based business. So grab your favorite notebook to take notes and let's get started. Sam, welcome back to Proof to Product.
Hello. I'm so excited to be talking to you again.
You sound so meek and like mild. And I know this podcast episode is going to get a little sassy, so I think it's funny that you're like, starting off that way.
Oh yeah, we're going to get loud and rowdy later.
Well, you were one of our very first guests on this show. I think it was the 2nd episode ever. So episode 2, for anyone listening, if you want to go back and listen to Sam's early days back in 2017, go listen to that. But I wanted to do this as more of like an update. Tell us what's going on in business these days for you. And then I've got some rapid fire questions before we dig into some other things too, but give us a quick overview on how things are going these days.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like things are wild. I was listening to that episode yesterday, actually, just like, oh, let's time travel back to 2017. I was like, whoa, bunch of stuff has changed. So
yeah,
I feel like I don't even know how to describe it. Basically, shortly after that episode, we moved to Florida just to have more space and bought a house thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to have all this room. And it was probably 6 months after that podcast interview that I was like, oh, okay, I gotta buy or rent a studio. And I'm now in my 2nd studio space and my husband is on payroll. My husband is my full-time studio manager. We have other employees and, you know, so it's just growing the team has been really great. I now do about 4 trade shows a year, which is a big difference from last time when I was like, I want to do 1 and nothing else.
Yep.
And yeah, I feel like my line has grown over the years. I think just I feel like my confidence in the products themselves and just in the line, like finding my voice over the years has gotten so much easier. And I don't know, I feel like, you know, it's just this like funny thing. I still can't believe that like, this is my job. I mean, I know I talked in the first call with you about how, like, I never intentionally set out to create a card brand. And I've been thinking more about it. And I've always been trying to figure out, okay, well, why did this happen? And I feel like I always, in college, I made a bunch of art about relationships and dating. And then after that, I was doing a lot of, you know, just love related stuff. My first greeting cards were around Valentine's Day and, you know, all related to love and relationships. And I realized that even though, I mean, love is still like the biggest sentiment I have across greeting cards, but, you know, it really has always been about relationships. And I feel like that's,
yeah,
you know, something that I was telling another greeting card person actually the other day on Instagram. I was talking to Sadie from 20 some and telling her, oh yeah, she posted something that just brought this to mind about, you know, that people were buying like the feeling that you gave them. Like
yep.
The idea that your customers purchase this feeling. They buy things because of the way it makes them feel. And I actually woke up from a dream the night before. God, this sounds so cheesy. I woke up from a dream the night before and just was like, oh my God, I know why I'm doing this. I know what's going on. Like this, you know, you have these like relationships that are between, you know, the viewer seeing your card. And then like, it's some of these cards are for like, you're going to share them with everyone. You're going to post it on social media. You get this message from someone, oh, you love it so much. And then it goes down through all these steps to like these cards that are more intimate. And like, these are just shared with you and your friend or partner, whoever gave them to you. And so it's just really weird because it was like, I'm still just trying to be a part of everyone's relationships, I feel. And
I love that.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm still doing that via cards, and I don't know, getting it all up in everyone's business. Is that kind of where I started and where I'm going?
Well, Sam, I love too that you address this whole like evolution of the why. I mean, I know that you and I have worked together for a very long time, and I've seen the evolution in you as a business owner, and also, which we'll get to in a little bit, and then also just the evolution of your line and all these things. But part of that evolution is also honing in on why are we continuing to do this? My reason for starting the business might be different than my reason for continuing the business or making different decisions in the business. So I appreciate you sharing that. Let's do a little rapid fire right now. I would love to know currently how many stores are your products carried in?
I feel like I should be better prepared with that answer. I I keep
roughly,
saying, I think it's like 500, but it's probably closer to like 650 now. We, you know, there are some that are like small chains. So I always go back and forth. Like, is this one store? Is this, you know, more? It's I'm not in any big box stores currently, but you know, I mean, if they want to give me a call, they can just, you know, here's my phone number. but that's fine. I mean, I would gladly do that, but yeah. So probably about 600 something across the US. And then I still work with a distributor in Canada. And also I work with a licensing company in the UK that has my products in stores over there.
Fantastic.
And across Europe and stuff. So
okay. And how many SKUs do you currently have and what product categories do you have now?
I think we have around 500 SKUs. I did just discontinue 50 or 60 in January, but I also added on 48. So it kind of was a wash. Did. No, but I mean, still primarily I'm a greeting card line, but you know, I feel like I always tell other card makers, like, man, if you're not doing stickers, you are just, you know, what are you waiting for? Because it's like printing money, I tell people. So I'm also just like a child of the 80s. So I'm just like, man, I want to become a sticker company. So yeah, so stickers, I guess that was
okay.
That's long-winded the other way of saying cards and stickers. We're also doing postcards. That's something I just started doing last year and I'm planning to expand more this year. It's just a nice little, it's kind of like the version of art prints that I guess I wanted to do, because I used to do larger art prints but wasn't really thrilled with them. I feel like I still want things to be shared on a smaller basis, like sending through the mail, and still doing enamel pins, but yeah, primarily the stickers, the cards, also some fridge magnets, and yeah, it's just
awesome. All right, yeah. Are you still working with sales reps?
Not anymore. So I was until, you know, I guess shortly after pandemic started. Over the course of like the last year and a half, I've ended all of those relationships.
Did that kind of coordinate with Tony coming into the business to be the studio manager? Is he like helping to manage those relationships?
He is. So he's working and doing a lot of the management of wholesale accounts. I think a lot of the shift in working with reps to not, or from working with reps to not working with reps, I think a lot of stuff just changed in the rep landscape, you know, with Fair and with the pandemic and shows and everything is just sort of, I feel like the whole industry has shifted around. Like I still always like have loved working with reps. I love the relationships I built with them over the years. And, you know, there's a different relationship that you have with buyers that you're not going to get if it's just online, which is also possibly a question coming up about trade shows because
So
I know in the call a few years back, oh my God, so many years back, Jesus, Katie, it was 6 years ago. Oh my God.
I know. It's wild, right?
Okay. That is insane. So I had only been doing the stationery show. That was it. That's all I was personally doing. And my reps were taking my line to New York Now twice a year. And I was like, oh, I would never do New York Now. Oh my God. It's just so funny to like listen to that version of myself. So now I do 4 shows a year, typically.
Which ones?
I do Atlanta twice a year. I live in Florida now, so it's a very easy drive. And I just try to do a different show every season. So last summer I did Dallas. This winter I did Vegas. Those are, you know, in addition to Atlanta. Last winter, or, you know, winter of 2022, I did New York. So this summer I'm trying to figure out what show to add on, potentially a New York show. We'll see. And I'll be doing Noted in April, oh my gosh, if that means we do 5 shows this year, it'll be hilarious. But it's the same, you know, it goes back to that same sort of relationship that reps have with those buyers. You know, having that in-person connection, I think, is just really important. And however that happens for your business, you know, whether that's with reps or with shows or, you know, you traveling around and, you know, bless you if you actually enjoy traveling, but, you know, traveling around and seeing buyers, I think that just getting your face in front of people or getting your brand directly, you know, physically in front of people is very different from just having an online presence. So
for sure. We're actually in the 3rd week of Paper Camp as we're recording this. And as you know, that's the week where we talk about marketing and we talk about, you know, email marketing strategies and snail mail campaigns. And we're getting into trade shows next week, but I've already alluded to the fact that face-to-face connection is like really critical. And we had 2 buyers come to, you know, weigh in, and we did the Q&A call with 2 buyers, and everyone always loves that Q&A call because you're getting in front of your customers and have a chance to ask all your burning questions. It was fascinating because they talk about how much they utilize Fair in their ordering. They talked about how they want to see the product in person if possible. So they're still going to shows to see it. It was just a really enlightening conversation. And you know this, but I'm going to share it for the listeners. We always couch that conversation by saying, these are just 2 buyers in a sea of many. So you're going to hear their perspective. You're going to hear how they like to buy. You're going to hear what their preferences are, but they're not speaking for the majority. You know, everyone's slightly different. But what you and I are talking about here is the power of seeing product in person, to feel it, to touch it, to see how much space it will take up in their shops. Like, it is a critical piece of selling it. And I think, too, with the past few years, the way they've been, yes, we've adapted. Product photography has gotten so much better, but I don't know. There's so much more that can be done in person. And if that is an option for folks, then I do recommend that they do something, whether it's sending samples, a trade show, having reps that go out and show their product, or like you said, kind of a roadshow might work too, but that's pretty extensive.
Yeah. I feel like it's just back in the days of the stationery show. So, you know, maybe that did that end like 2018, 2019, I think by 2019, it kind of had been absorbed already into,
it was kind of, yeah, I think 20. Now.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the days of the stationery show, I feel like, you know, this is pre-Fair and, you know, any of those other online platforms. And, you know, there were, of course, brands that were not doing those trade shows. But I think that anyone who was actively trying to wholesale a stationery line knew what kind of quality they had to have and knew what their competition was, you know?
Yeah.
Whether they did a trade show or they saw those products in stores. And I feel like now with this, just with the online platforms for wholesale, there are a lot more people who are starting these businesses without, you know, without the knowledge of like what they need to be producing. You know, maybe they're selling online on Etsy. And I mean, that's great. That's great. If they sell online on Etsy, that's great. If they have a line that's, you know, really large and they want to start selling to stores. But I think some people don't realize the quality they need to have. And so, you know, buyers might get something in that looks nice online because there are nice photos of it. And then they get the quality and they're just, you know, a little bummed out. And, you know, with those online platforms, a lot of them allow you to return your first order. So maybe those lines are getting their orders returned, or maybe the buyers just are like, we're just going to sell it. It's fine. Yeah. But I think if, you know, if I were a buyer, I would want to go to shows and see everything, be able to see it in person, be able to touch it. And I think as a paper company, like I've always been someone who's sending out samples at, with every show mailer I send out, I'm always sending a sample of a new product. I always send information. I mean, oh my God, stickers, like I said, you know, they become a huge part of my business, and all stickers are not created the same. Like the shit you're making at home on your Cricut. Oh my God. It's beautiful. It looks great. And it's a great gift, but like, it's going to fall apart if you put it on something that goes through the dishwasher or like on a car. And and the stickers I'm using like are so heavy duty and so nice. And you know, the quality that we're using versus quality of this other product, and they're priced the same. And I'm just like, don't. So I always, you know, I do feel like I spend time at shows explaining to buyers who may not be carrying already a lot of different sticker companies or a lot of different cards. Like I tell them, here, touch this product. I want you to touch the paper, take it out of the sleeve. I want you to touch this sticker and feel the weight of it. And I want to explain to you like what this product is. And so I always try to, you know, convey that information and listings online too. But just like with Etsy, you know, and wholesale marketplaces as well, people don't like to read things. So
yes, that is true.
You know, you still do. I feel like having that in person, you know, or just that tactile experience, whether it is something you're just sending through the mail or it's something that they're seeing at a show, making sure to give them all the information about the quality, about the production process. You know, I know people who are doing screen printing or letterpress, you know, making sure that your buyers know that, like know all of the different like things that make your line stand apart from that production standpoint or that quality standpoint. And, you know, that's something that a lot of them are not going to be able to determine just by looking at it online.
Yeah. I love that you're weaving messaging into this because you're absolutely right. For example, the brands in our community are using high quality, for the most part, everyone is using high quality manufacturing, high quality products. And if they weren't using it before, when they come into our community, they recognize the importance of that and how to have a successful wholesale line that's needed, right? But it is difficult to articulate that in an online listing. It is difficult. Like we can say it's handmade, it's hand letterpressed, it's, you know, using these, you know, this weight of paper or whatever, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know. They're like, I don't know what that means.
Right. I mean, heck, if you tell people this, you need to do an A2 card versus an A7 card, some people don't even know what that is, you know? And so it's difficult to have that messaging without going over some people's heads, but also wanting to articulate this is heavyweight. This is, you know, so trying to translate that is difficult too. But that brings us back to the importance of having these conversations, having the ability for people to see and touch things. And I think that your perspective on that is really it's really hands-on, which is fantastic. And more people need to be thinking about how they're articulating their message around that to show. I mean, there's obviously other things we need to talk about. We need to make it easy for the buyers to buy. We need to show them how much they're going to spend and how quickly we turn things around. And like those logistical pieces are very important. But in a market now that has become very easy for people to start businesses in some of these spaces, we do need to use our messaging and our photos and things to set ourselves apart if we're not showing up in an in-person format to sell. So I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on that and just kind of your viewpoints of how that has shifted in the industry, because I agree with a lot of that. You know, I would love to talk about how you, Sam Kramer, have evolved as a business owner. And I know in a recent post within our community, you said something along the lines of, and hopefully no children are around, but you said that you used to be a delicate effing flower in the early days. So I want to talk about what that was like then and how you feel you are different now.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think as a small business owner, especially, you know, within the greeting card world, I would say 75% of the people I know that are running a small greeting card business, they are the artist, they are the author of all of the cards. And, you know, or potentially, you know, a step away from that, they have like one or two other people that are on their team. You know, there's some people that have like a slew of illustrators and writers underneath them. And that's amazing too. But I think the smaller you are, you know, the more personal everything is. And so I have always been pretty like slow growth, slow and steady growth, as Katie would say, over the years. And a lot of that was just because I was scared. You know, anytime anything went wrong, I just took it as like the end of the world. And, you know, it really held me back a lot. And if a risk went unrewarded, I guess, if it went poorly, I just would hesitate to take any risks after that. And, you know, I took a long time to delegate things to other people. I mean, I think if you're not delegating some things out, you're holding yourself back. Obviously, you can't grow your business if you're trying to do everything. And, you know, I tried and was burned multiple times, different positions, whether it be someone in-house or out of house. Outhouse. I was like,
Outhouse is good.
The vibe. I was like, the outhouse customers. You know, whether that be someone outside of the studio or inside. And, you know, just over the years, it's gotten easier. I think that a lot of that is just trial and error, just more used to different humans and how they're going to operate differently. And I feel like a huge part of this has been working with you as a coach over the years. I feel like, you know, shout out to Katie Hunt, everyone. I was like, can I promote you in the middle of your own podcast? No, I mean, you've just been a great sounding board over the years, and, you know, other people within the community that you've cultivated, I feel, have been really good to lean on for advice about, you know, hiring people for your business. And I feel like that's always been a big thing within the proof to product community. Just people are always like willing to share their story and how they grew their team. And the more I read about someone else growing their team or listen on the podcast about someone else growing their team, it's like, okay, this gives me a little more confidence in doing this myself. And after we moved to Florida, my husband was working remotely for his other job, and the pandemic kind of killed that industry that he was working in a little bit. It just drastically like slashed his hours and the need for his position. And so I needed help, and I brought him on just sort of part-time to help me with what was, you know, going on behind the scenes and to help me kind of, you know, plan more for the future with the business. And I didn't really intend to hire him on as a permanent fixture in the business, but it just sort of organically happened. And then I was like, oh, you're going to be a full-time person on payroll now. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. So, yeah, my husband is my studio manager now. I mean, that might not count as the most adventurous delegation, you know, to hire someone who you inherently trust with everything. But I think it was good for me as a person with, you know, who had been burned in the past and just personally had a lot of trust issues. I definitely attribute a lot to you, but also been in therapy for the last year. Shout out to my therapist. You know, I feel like, I think after I started going to therapy, I actually reached out to you and was like, hey, I started therapy. And you're like, as your business coach, I really appreciate that.
Hey, you know, our lives are so entwined with business, but no, yes, we all need support in different ways for sure.
Yeah. And it is funny. I mean, I actually spend over half of every call every week talking about my business. So, I mean, it is all intertwined, and
it is.
And yeah. I do think that I am able to make that distinction between it's personal, it's business more and more these days. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, it's weird because it's this thing like, you know, simultaneously the business is very personal, but also I can separate like, no, this is, you know, this is what is the best for business. And you know, that's, or it's just a business thing. It's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. Don't let it affect everything else. And, and also it's just, yeah, I think it's helped me. I think therapy has helped me with expectations of other people and being able to delegate tasks and being able to be like, oh, right. It's okay if it's not done the way that you do it, as long as it's done. And it's, you know, it's like, this is this weird thing. I mean, I feel like other people might be like, yeah, that's of course. And I'm like, no, no, it took me a long time to really like process that.
Well, so, and a lot of people have a hard time with that. I know we've talked a lot about this delegating piece, and there is the relinquishing of control. There is that somebody else might do it a different way. You know, is the out, I mean, ultimately it boils down to, is the outcome, is the end result what we need it to be? And if so, great. But some of us have a harder time with that than others. And so really proud of you, to be honest, Sam. Like, I'm proud of you that you have, I know you were burned in different phases of this process because I was there alongside you. But my point is, I'm proud of you for continuing to try to make it work for you. And obviously, you know, your husband's obviously someone you trust very, very much. And so that makes it an easy transition. But then you've layered in other team members as you've gone too. And so you're stretching yourself as a business owner, but you're also stretching yourself as a human by saying, okay, I'm not going to micromanage this situation, or I'm not going to worry about the steps they take so long as the outcome is what we need it to be for the business. I also want to kind of dig into a little bit of like, you've matured and grown so much. And I do think that's a natural thing that happens as we, you know, with tenure in our business, but also the, what you were talking about of like having thick skin, of not being, you know, in the early days of running a business, we could get a not even like negative message from somebody. Maybe it's like lukewarm message from someone. And some people that would like set them off down a spiral of like, oh my gosh, like I'm awful, or, you know, whatever negative self-talk we want to insert there. But now you have done so much work on yourself that like those kind of things, you have thicker skin, right? And those things, are you letting them roll off your back more now than you were back then?
Yeah. I think that, you know, there have been a lot of things just over the years that I look back and I'm like, oh man, yeah, if this would have happened, you know, we're like going through some big shit right now. And I was like, man, if this big shit happened like 5 years ago, I would have just crawled in a hole for like a month, you know, and not been able to, like, everything else would have fallen apart around me. And then, you know, the problem that was like, you know, let's say you had some sort of small problem in the past, and, you know, it could have been something, oh my God, it could have been something like a buyer reaching out and saying, oh, you know, we were missing 6 cards from our order. And I was so, I mean, I still, okay, let's be real. I'm still so anal retentive like about this stuff, but no, like that would have just like ruined my week if somehow I had undershipped an order, or, you know, something like that had happened. And that's like, they were fine. They weren't even mad, because as I've talked to other buyers, like, you know, I can count on one hand, like the amount of times over the, like the last decade that has actually happened, because I am so hyper about it. But, you know, I've talked to other buyers who are like, oh yeah, no, every other order that comes into our store is wrong. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit. Other people are not as laser focused on this perfection aspect as I am. And so when a single tiny thing goes wrong, it's the end of the world to me. And I didn't really realize I was doing that. And so I'm just trying to get better about like accepting when things are not perfect. that sounds silly, because it's not like everything is perfect every day, but I feel like I've gotten better over the years about, you know, just dealing with things as they happen and knowing that everyone's human. You know, if it's someone on my team's mistake, if it's my mistake, there are some things that are a little more embarrassing than others. You know, we rearranged, I remember, you know, I love being able to like point the finger internally and just be like, oh, well, this is, you know, Tony messed this up or something, you know, cause we do keep physical job folders for everything we ship out, which I know still everyone is like, oh my God,
I still can't believe you do that.
It comes in so handy all the time. I make notes about it. Anyway, I will die on this hill. So But basically, you know, I can go back to a job folder and know exactly who packed it. I can know if there were notes on it. Like if someone says something's missing, I can say, oh, I see on your order form, this is packaged with this other product. Did you look in with this? Or have you opened the magnets because the stickers are in with the magnets, something like that. And then they're like, oh yeah, oops. You know, and the person, it was totally just, you know, and so that covers our ass, you know, for one thing, but also I can look at it and see, okay, who packaged this? And yeah, we rearrange the studio whenever we discontinue product or whenever we add a bunch of new product, we have to shift things around. And we had moved some magnets to a different shelving unit. And so they were no longer where I visually, like where I remembered them to be in the space. And I was packing an order and I shipped out a few things with some language on them to a store that does not carry anything remotely sweary at all. And then, and it's someone who I like had a lovely chat with at a trade show. And she was like, oh, I don't know if I could do some of these things because, you know, they're a little too edgy for my store. And I was like, no, no, we've got, oh my God. And then I sent her like just the worst things on accident because they were in the place where the other ones had been. And I was trying to do too much at once. And so I think also like, that's a humbling experience to be like, oh, it was my fault. So now I can't get upset when anyone else does it. You know.
And also recognizing, which you just said, we're all human. We are all going to make mistakes. When we do make mistakes, we take responsibility for that accountability. We acknowledge our mistakes. We fix the mistakes. Like, and life goes on. But I know what you're saying about how in the earlier days of business, or even just if we're struggling with emotional regulation or other things, like certain things that are really, truly small problems can feel, they can feel so big. And so it's more of kind of maturing and doing the hard work to understand that like, okay, this isn't the end of the world and we can correct this mistake, right? Like we can. And so I don't know, I think there is a perspective shift that needs to happen. And obviously not all entrepreneurs fall into this, you know, bucket of people that have a hard time with this, but a lot of people do. A lot of people I coach struggle with the negative talk or the like being very hard on themselves or having really high expectations. And then when things don't go as planned, it becomes a very big deal. So being able to zoom out, I guess, is what I want to say, like zooming out and recognizing like, okay, wait, this is okay. We're, you know, this is not a life or death situation.
I feel like that's a really good, I'm writing that down, like zooming out, just the idea of zooming out is really important, I think, because, you know, you get lost in the weeds. I feel like that's just, you know, you're in the middle of this tiny little problem and it feels like the giant thing. And if you just like step back, you're just thinking, oh, okay. No, it's like one small thing amidst like a thousand other things that are happening. And, you know, I mean, with the law of averages or whatever, you know, most of the shit's going fine. And also I feel like something that you've always said regarding events, usually regarding trade shows, I feel like one of the things you always preach is like, no one knows what didn't get done. No one knows, like you may have had this plan, but no one else knows the plan. Like no one knows what didn't happen. And no one knows except you. And so you have this wonderful show and your booth looks great. Your product looks great. Sure. You wanted to have this whole other line. Well, who cares? It's fine. It doesn't matter. You can do it later. And I think that that's something that I've always applied to shows. And oh man, over the years, I mean, I would hear you say that all the time. And let's be real, it probably took a few years before it sunk in. But you know, I had stuff like just for the shows in January, I didn't submit some of the, I think it was my stickers. I thought that I'd sent them off to the printer and I had not submitted the order.
Oh no.
So it was sitting in my cart and I was like, oh my God, no, I don't have them. They're not going to be here before I go to the shows. And I was like having a meltdown. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to print that shit out for my printer at the studio and cut it out and stick it on the wall. And no one even noticed. Like some of the buyers I'm really friendly with, who I've known like for a decade now, this is wild. Like seeing people at shows, I'm like, you first bought from me at the stationery show in 2014. It's just crazy to think it's been like almost 10 years of seeing these people at shows. But yeah, some of those buyers, I was like, oh, just a question. Like, does that look strange to you? And she's like, oh my God, I never would have noticed.
Yes, also they don't notice.
you know, a lot of people are like new buyers might be paying attention to, you know, the quality of the products, like especially buyers who are just like seasoned, they're just looking through stuff like, okay, I like it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. This, yeah. How's this doing? I feel like that's always the, how does this do? How does this
What's new? How is this doing? Yeah. What's their best sellers? But also I was going to add here that like, you may have had those just as like plain pieces of paper on the wall, but you also have other samples that show the quality.
Right.
So
exactly.
They can envision that, okay, it will be this quality, yeah. but it will be this artwork, you know? And I think that's helpful too.
Yeah. We also had, I sort of last minute was like, oh, you know, I'd like to do some more enclosure cards. Cause that's something, I mean, I have the regular greeting cards and I had done enclosure cards for years and I just hadn't released any new ones. I think I looked back and it was like 2019 or something was the last time I had released new ones. And I was like, you always think to yourself like, oh man, this product category doesn't sell that well. And then you realize you haven't released something new in it. And that's, you know, cards, obviously I'm releasing new cards every season, like 4 times a year, I'm doing new releases and stickers we're doing 4 times a year. Magnets, I went like a year or two between releases. I think it was 2 years. And I felt like, oh, maybe magnets aren't doing as well anymore. And then I was like, let me just try 6 new designs. And after that, it wasn't like just those 6 new designs sold. It was all of the designs sold. And just having new things in a product category, I think always helps. And so that, you know, if you have those, if you have that product category, I mean, at this point, I would even feel confident sticking a piece of paper up with my magnets. Like the sticker, it's might, someone might not notice that it's not really a sticker on the wall. They might just think like, oh, you know, that's the same. They're glossing over it. A magnet, if they see a piece of paper, they can tell that's not
right,
real.
Right.
But they wouldn't care. I mean, they have something to compare it to. I mean, prototypes are used in so many different businesses. And I feel like we just think we can't do them because we have these businesses, especially, you know, I feel like most of us have products that are largely made in the US. And so, you know, the turnaround time is relatively quick, but I am so sick of paying rush shipping on things because I have this internal freak out about something that needs to be perfect. And I realized like it doesn't actually matter to the success of the business or, you know, I mean, if we're talking about like having product on hand for a seasonal thing, sure, you know, you might end up having to stomach some rush shipping fees, but, you know, by and large, it's fine to just go with prototypes for the meantime and, you know, deal with normal shipping rates.
Yeah. And I just also think we need to lower our expectations. You know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as entrepreneurs. We do want everything buttoned up and perfect. And sometimes things go right out. They're totally outside of our control, or maybe they're inside of our control. Like you forgot to submit that order, but you know what? You made it through and it was totally fine. We figure out a solution. We figure out a plan B, a plan C for these kind of things. It's been so fun catching up with Sam. Sam, thank you so much for your candid and heartfelt convo here. Growing a business is not easy. And when we share both the highlights and the tough spots, it reminds all of us that we're not alone on this business journey. Next week, we'll continue the conversation on episode 295. Sam and I will talk about mental health as a business owner and why every entrepreneur needs a hobby that they aren't monetizing. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast player so you don't miss that one next week. Sam mentioned several times in this episode the importance of community and coaching, and lucky for you, we run one of the most well-respected, action-focused coaching programs for physical product-based business owners. It's called Proof to Product Labs, and it is where we help product brands strengthen their sales, their marketing, and their systems. Get all the details and join us at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Thanks for sticking around until the end. Sam and I will be back next week with part 2 of her interview. Have a great week.